This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Lisa Tomlin Kerr, Director of Development for the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Foundation. Together with the Gratitude Project, the LVMPD Foundation is hosting the 6th annual Hidden Heroes Gala next weekend. Lisa, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
So, for those who aren't familiar with the organization, what exactly does the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Foundation do?
Yeah, so what we do is we're a direct support for LVMPD, whether it's raising funds to help support things like training, the special unit, equipment, and the community engagement.
It seems like there's a lot of community events all the time that are put on by the LVMPD Foundation.
Yeah, there really is. And you know what? It's great because we're driven by Metro Police Department based on the needs of the community. And, you know, and it's really important for our officers to help the community and help bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community. You know, they really just want to help. And it's things like maybe the backpack program. We have scholarships. You know, we have Easter events, you know, those trunk or treat, some where we provide a safe environment. And that way that our officers and our community can get to know one another and to build that relationship and that trust.
That's awesome. So tell us about the 6th annual Hidden Heroes Gala that's coming up next weekend.
Yeah, this is really exciting. So every year we recognize a different unit. And so this year we are recognizing our events planning section, EPS. And so basically what this section does is that they ensure the safety when it becomes to planning, implementation, regarding all major events in Las Vegas. So we're talking things like that's coming up for maybe the Super Bowl. We have things like EDC, Life is Beautiful, concerts. And so what they do is they ensure the safety of millions who are attending, whether they're tourists or they're locals. And so this particular unit really makes sure that everyone has a great time, but the safety. They also work with other agencies and other first responders to be prepared so that they can collaborate and work together if anything should happen at any of these events.
So these are the hidden heroes that the Hidden Heroes Gala is honoring.
It is, because a lot of times this is a unit that's maybe unseen. And so it's important that we recognize them of, you know, what they're doing year round, because not only are they, you know, helping with the safety at these events, but they keep our economy thriving because, you know, everyone wants to come to Vegas and there's always either a concert or a festival or anything like that. And it's important that we show that we appreciate what they're doing and that we see what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we know it's next weekend, but give us the details, the when and the where of the Hidden Heroes Gala.
Absolutely. So it's going to be on Friday, May 12th, and that's going to be held at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. You know, we invite anybody who wants to attend and appreciate these stories in the background. There's going to be a live auction, a silent auction. And for more information, you can go onto our website, lvmpdfoundation.org.
Okay, so it starts at 5:30, and how long do you expect it to go?
Usually goes about 9:30. About 9:30, we have a great reception area, a great dinner, a great program. It's a lot of fun, and it really gives us a glimpse into what this unit does for the community and gives us an insight.
That's awesome. So is there a dress code or any special way that people should dress if they're going to attend?
So yeah, so it's a gala. So people come in evening gowns, you know, suit and tie, or, you know, we have some people who dress up in tuxedos, you know, or a nice dress shirt. So it's really an evening to get dressed up and go out and support our Metro PD.
Okay, awesome. So you mentioned the lvmpdfoundation.org website is the place to get more information, and they can also get tickets there as well?
Yes, tickets, sponsorships, or anything like that.
Okay, nice. And I'm assuming also at the website they can find out about other things that the LVMPD Foundation does, including maybe upcoming events?
They can. They can find about what programs are provided within the community. And then, you know, each area command holds their own event. So what we do is, so you know, what's coming up. So we have the backpack program. They would actually need to reach out to their local area command. But anyone can reach out to us and ask about any of the area command events. It actually gives a really great glimpse into the different programs that we're running, and we're more than happy to answer any questions that anybody might have.
All right, awesome. So once again, lvmpdfoundation.org is the website to go to, lvmpdfoundation.org. You can find out more about the LVMPD Foundation and events that they have coming up, but especially next weekend's Hidden Heroes Gala. If you want to find out more about that, or you want to get tickets to go to the gala, that's the place to do it, lvmpdfoundation.org. And that is happening next Friday, May 12th. It starts at 5:30 with the reception, goes till about 9:30 p.m., and it's all happening at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. lvmpdfoundation.org. And Lisa, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know a little bit more about what the LVMPD Foundation does, and especially about the Hidden Heroes Gala that's coming up. Sounds like so much fun and a really great event. So I appreciate you being here and sharing with us. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. We appreciate, you know, the support and spreading the word about what we're trying to do in the community through Metro.
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you, as a police officer, we're building partnerships. This should be happening everywhere. So the police should be reaching out to this community. And this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Pete Gioni, Director of Culinary Innovation and Training at Canyon Ranch Las Vegas. Pete's heading up a 10-week Cooking for a Cure fundraising campaign to support the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, or LLS. Pete, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
So what exactly is Cooking for a Cure?
Cooking for a Cure is a team that I put together for this Visionaries of the Year campaign for the Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation. So that was something that I was nominated for actually back in the end of 2019. And the purpose is to raise money to help blood cancer research, promote advocacy, and give more patient access. And so my team is really a bunch of restaurants that are teaming up and giving their customers access to donate directly to the LLS.
Okay, so you were nominated at the end of 2019 for Visionaries of the Year. I'm assuming it was put on hold for COVID. But what exactly is the Visionaries of the Year?
It's a 10-week fundraiser, and people are nominated to run and raise as much money as humanly possible and really to support this great cause. And I was nominated because actually back in 2009, I was given the opportunity to cook for people battling cancer. I worked for a guy with lung cancer. I worked for another gentleman with leukemia. And both of them had, in 2009 and 2010, had terrible odds to live past 2012. And actually, you know, just a few months later, my mother in Connecticut was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. So all of a sudden, cancer just kind of surrounded my career. And so it really changed the food that these people were eating. And it gave them such incredible chances. So they're still alive today. They have the opportunity to listen to this broadcast. And it's something that I'm extremely passionate about, to help spread the word about the benefits of food, and whether people feel that food is medicine or that medicine is actually the cure. I think that restaurants can unite together and raise money to help support the research from the scientific side, and then create awareness for the benefits of food to help people eat well and hopefully not get into this situation at all to begin with.
Okay, let's talk about the scientific side a little bit. What kind of diet is beneficial to people who are battling cancer?
One of the things that really, I think that there's three major criteria. One is we want to consume as few pesticides, preservatives, and chemicals in our food as possible, because the immune system is really compromised already. And this will really help us focus on fighting the disease, which is really the primary function of our immune system. The second thing is to consume a lot of ingredients, and it's fun things like garlic and onions. And then there's some greens in there, kale and spinach, and a lot of these anti-inflammatories. So we know that cancer is this rapidly reproducing cell, and the more anti-inflammatories we can find in our food, the slower the process will be. And then also, this beneficial diet conditions our body to help be resistant to more cancer cells. And then if we are going through treatment, that we can recover so much faster from the medicine that they give us for it.
Okay, so you were able to help the people that you were directly cooking for. Were you able to pass this information on to your mom as well?
You know, that was one of the things that I really set a goal, because I was here in Las Vegas and my mother was in Connecticut and my dad started to cook for her. And I was using all these ingredients and creating recipes. And I said, you know, I was like, there's got to be a way to pass it not only onto her, but then I'm looking at how many people are diagnosed with cancer every year. It's 1.6 million people a year are diagnosed with cancer. It was just like, oh my God, it's more than just my family that needs that. So I started to build a website at the time called Cancer Cuisine. And I was really trying to upload the information in recipes. And back then, it was much more cumbersome to build a website. Now there's platforms where I could really build my own. And so I have this website called Cooking for a Cure. And that one is where I share some recipes and blogs and information about that. But to be honest, my mother didn't make it past 2 years with battling ovarian cancer. And she was going through chemo and had surgery. And the website that I built at the time took a little bit over 2 years to find a developer to build. So now that the information is out there and I have this platform to share my information, to share my story, you know, my whole goal, my whole mission, whether it's through food or through supporting with medicine, is to keep families together longer.
So how exactly is the money going to be raised during the Cooking for a Cure campaign?
So right now, I'm really looking for a lot of restaurants to display the QR code that promotes the team Cooking for a Cure. With that, all I'm asking is that they use a check presenter and include that with the check. They have a QR code on an 8.5 by 11 at the cash register, or we could even supply table tents. And that way customers can scan the QR code and it goes directly to the Leukemia Lymphoma Society website where they could donate, they could save their receipt, and they could use it as a tax deduction at the end of the year. So it's really no ask from the restaurants at all as far as the financial participation, but it's that exposure and it's that teamwork and the camaraderie to really talk about this cause and make a difference. I think that's where there's so many restaurants out there, whether they're actually using food to promote wellness or not, that they could really make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So far, which restaurants are getting involved?
Yeah, we've got barbecue restaurants out in Buffalo, New York. We've got Manzilla's Pizza here in Las Vegas. And then one of my favorites is the Boulevard Breakfast and Lunches here as well. There's also restaurants at the airport in San Francisco. So it's really becoming a nationwide event. And I think that's going to be so exciting to see more and more restaurants participate. And by the end of it in June 10th, that I think that will really raise over $100,000 is the goal, and to help really support this cause.
Nice. Okay. So where are they going to be able to see a list of the restaurants so that they know where they can go to scan that QR code?
Yeah, they can visit cookingforacure.com and you'll see the blogs there. You'll see all the restaurants listed and you can follow me on social media at Chef Gioni and you can tag your favorite restaurants and we'll get them involved too.
Can people also donate without actually going to the restaurants, just go straight to the page and make a donation that way?
Yes, definitely. They can go to cookingforacure.com and donate now button will take you right to it. And you'll be able to make a meaningful donation right there.
Okay. Now, why did you specifically choose to support the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in your fundraising efforts?
Yeah, that came from working with Donnie Strunk. And he's a leukemia warrior. He was diagnosed with incurable leukemia back in 2010. They told him that the doctors had told him that it didn't really matter what he ate. And they said, you know, to enjoy life, it's going to be about 3 months to 3 years. And he just celebrated a little over 12 years of his cancer anniversary. So food has made such a drastic difference in just his life. And I know that based on his results alone, I really feel like the information that I have is wasted if I don't share it. And there's so many other people that could benefit from this. And so I think it's my personal connection with Donnie, and then watching, you know, their children to grow up and get married. They're having grandkids now and graduating college and starting their careers. And Donnie gets to be there for all of that. And I think that that's one of the things that no matter what job I have in my career, that personal connection and seeing these families and watching them grow and stay together, I think is the most impactful, rewarding part of the career. Anything, all these fun events that I've done in the past and momentous things that I've done with my career, I don't think that anything will top that. I think that really, that impact, that personal impact that I've had on their lives, I think is something that I hope everyone has the opportunity to feel, because I know that if just me, just little Pete from Connecticut can make a difference on somebody's life, literally anybody can do it. And then it's just about, really for me, it was like cooking like somebody's life depended on it, and caring. I just literally cared about what I was doing and understood the research and worked with some doctors and collaborated. But if I could do it, I literally know that anybody can make a difference. So whether it's through food or through a donation, we're all capable of making that difference.
That's fantastic. So basically you're saying that officially the scientific word is that diet doesn't make a difference, but logically we know that what we put in our body will affect our body. So you kind of went beyond what people were officially saying and made these discoveries on your own?
Yeah, correct. There was books like The Anti-Cancer written by Dr. David Servan-Schreiber. There was a doctor that was very influential in my life, Dr. Humans. And these people really believe that food has a major impact. And I saw the results of using that on other people and cooking for them and providing that. I see the difference in myself and what I feed myself. And you know, scientifically, there's no cure with food. The FDA hasn't approved any of that. One day, I swear the science will say that food could be a cure, but we're not there yet. And so I think that we can really use food to create awareness about the science and the scientific fact and the research, and use our platform as feeding people. Restaurants can feed people up to 3 times a day or more, and people are in restaurants all the time. So using that platform, I think, is huge. And food makes a personal impact on people, whether it's just their Instagram moments with the beautiful food presentations or how they feel afterwards. So for my concept, I think it's really about, you know, farm to fuel and the way that people feel. And I just hope that becomes contagious and people will catch on to that and put that love into their food. But so I think that there's a combination of both food and medicine that's going to really make a difference. And I think that that's what's very unique about my campaign and my platform for this Visionaries of the Year.
Okay, awesome. So just to be clear, you're not recommending that people don't do what their doctors tell them as far as treatment. So whether that's chemotherapy or whatever it happens to be, you're saying go ahead and do that. But keep in mind that what you eat can have an extremely beneficial outcome on top of that.
Yeah, totally. And so I feel that, you know, if we use food early on in our life, that hopefully it'll keep us out of a lot of bad medical situations. But doctors have so much scientific research behind what they do. So I think the combination is great. I think that you need doctors to understand where your health is before you can kind of navigate and change it. You know, wellness is an individual journey, and it's a doctor that's going to tell you where you stand and where you need to go in order to feel your best. So that combination is very important. And I think personally, some people will choose to only go the holistic route and only use food. They're afraid of medicine, but I think that there's enough science behind the research to say that medicine can be very beneficial as well. So that combination for me is huge. I never not go to the doctor, but I try and not have to be in that situation.
Yeah, and that's a great point that if we eat right, if we eat healthy, we might avoid some diseases that we would have otherwise gotten just because we are keeping our temple, so to speak, healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's so many different causes for disease and genetic reasons. And so I think that sometimes some things are impossible to avoid, but hopefully we can lessen the impact.
Awesome. Okay. So once again, the website to go to is cookingforacure.com, cookingforacure.com. The Cooking for a Cure campaign is running from April 12th to June 10th, and the goal is to raise $100,000 in 10 weeks. You can either check out the list of restaurants that are on that website, cookingforacure.com. You can make a donation with the QR code at the restaurant, or you can just directly make a donation yourself. And if you want to follow Pete on social media, find out more about Cooking for a Cure, besides all the fantastic information that he's got at cookingforacure.com, you can also follow him on social at Chef Gione, and that's G-H-I-O-N-E at Chef Gione. And Pete, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know about this campaign that you're doing. It sounds fantastic. And the fact that it has spread, you know, kind of nationwide, and it looks like it's kind of snowballing from here. That's really awesome. And the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is a great organization. We've had them on the show before. So it's great that you're supporting them, spreading the word, and helping people to live healthy and also, you know, take care of their body in a natural way by giving out this information that you have personally seen help people. So I appreciate your time, and I appreciate what you're doing with this campaign. And thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for helping me to kick this off.
In honor of all those we've lost to cancer and those still fighting and thriving, like basketball analyst Dick Vitale.
I'm going to beat cancer. I'm going to beat it. That's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to win this battle.
Defeating cancer will take all of us. At the V Foundation, V is for victory over cancer. V is for victory over giving up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Join our team in the fight against cancer at V.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Mark Bloom, Executive Director of America's Agenda, Healthcare for All. Mark is a recognized expert on innovative solutions to address the rising costs of healthcare. Under his direction, America's Agenda has achieved unrivaled success in building and winning statewide comprehensive healthcare reform campaigns. Mark, thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So for those who don't know, what exactly is America's Agenda Healthcare for All?
America's Agenda is a coalition of folks that care about the affordability of healthcare in America and want to find common ground between labor and employers, between Republicans and Democrats, for finding policy solutions to make healthcare affordable for all Americans.
Nice. Okay. So what's affecting prescription drug prices in particular?
Well, the prescription drug market is a market that is intermediated by these large, often invisible mega corporations, corporate middlemen, if you will, called pharmacy benefit managers that have a role of distorting drug prices and, in fact, have a systematic impact at pushing drug prices upwards. PBMs, when they initially emerged, had a very compelling value proposition. They asserted that they could aggregate demand from small employers, large employers, public insurance plans, individual patients, amass large amounts of demand, and then go and negotiate with pharmacy companies, pharmacy manufacturers, bargain down the cost of their drugs, and then pass those savings on to customers, to consumers. Great idea. They still do that. They do that very well. Problem is, PBMs figured out a couple of decades ago that they could create these savings and then divert them into their own bank accounts rather than passing savings through onto consumers. And they've done that very effectively. In fact, in terms of wealth, in terms of gross profit, PBMs are the fastest growing entities in American healthcare. And they, more than any other entity, have been responsible for driving up the price of prescription medicines. It gets a little worse than that because PBMs have also figured out that as middlemen, they can make larger profit margins by preferring high list price drugs, expensive drugs, compared to low list price drugs. And so PBMs have systematically pushed preference for higher priced drugs over lower priced therapeutically equivalent drugs. The U.S. Senate Finance Committee did a report recently where they found in the area of diabetes medicine, of insulin, for example, that PBMs systematically preferred higher price insulins and insulin substitutes over lower price ones simply because they could make higher profit margins. So PBMs sit in the middle of the prescription drug marketplace, set prices for consumers, and make profits by the difference between price of manufacturers and what they charge health plans. Also, they sit in the middle between manufacturers and pharmacies and make money in the middle there. And actually, they also, it's a perfect storm for PBMs. They sit between pharmacies and health plans and make money over manipulating price differences between those entities. It's a perfect storm of arbitrage. PBMs make money from several different sources in the same drug transaction.
So this sounds like a big multinational drug cartel or some kind of, you know, something from a movie. Is it actually legal what they're doing, making money from all different directions?
Currently, it's legal. There is a number of bills in Congress that are designed to change the law regarding PBMs. The Federal Trade Commission is actually currently, it's open an investigation of the PBM industry about restraint of trade and investigating whether these are in fact large trusts, that they violate American antitrust law. They are in fact oligopolies. PBMs constitute 80%. They process 80% of the drug claims in American healthcare. 80% of the market is under PBM control. They are international in the sense that each of the big three PBMs has now opened what's called a group purchasing organization. Two of those are offshore so that they can't be easily viewed or regulated. But PBMs are a uniquely American phenomenon. It's not an international business model, except for they run offices and accounting and group purchasing offshore. It's an American phenomenon. Other countries don't have PBMs. It is a uniquely American business, and it's uniquely American consumers that are having their prices gouged by PBM intermediaries.
Interesting. Okay. Now, when I go to the pharmacy, I'll typically choose the generic version of a drug, which, you know, some of these big pharmacies, the ones that we've all heard of, they have those generic drugs for, you know, $4 or, you know, a very low cost. So are PBMs not affecting the generic drugs? Are they hoping that these pharmacies will stop recommending generics?
Well, when you go to a pharmacy and buy a generic drug for $4, or if you use GoodRx or another similar app that tells you how you can buy drugs more cheaply than your copay in your health plan, and in fact, you can do that, that shows you how sick the system is. You're actually paying full cost for that drug. The higher copay you're paying is your cost share of the price of the same drug in your PBM plan. So your PBM, which is kind of, it's your insurance plan for drugs, your cost share is more expensive than buying the full price at your pharmacy. That's how badly things are awry for PBMs. But get this, generic drugs are a big profit source for PBMs. Think of it this way. You've got a brand drug. Brand is a monopoly drug. After a certain number of years, patents expire, the brand becomes generic, and the price falls. Your price of your Lipitor may have been $60 per 30-day prescription. It falls to $20 on your PBM plan. But if that drug cost 4 cents a pill or $4 per prescription, the difference between $20 and $20 seems a lot cheaper than $60, but it's a lot more than $4. The PBMs make enormous margin on that. And GoodRx or buying directly from your pharmacy, you actually are paying less than your PBM is charging. That's part of the PBM hustle.
Okay. Now, according to your research, how do consumers feel about all this?
Well, the research has shown some amazing things. It's shown that PBMs were kind of obscure and shadowy, but Americans very largely are coming to understand what PBMs are and what they do. A lot of that is a result of work of members of Congress. Your own Senator Cortez Masto has been very, very outspoken about the role of PBMs. Americans are getting it. So research we recently did showed that 84% of Americans, and that's 84% of Americans of both parties, we couldn't tell party affiliation in this poll based on opinions. A broad consensus of Americans feel that PBMs need to have rules made so they cannot make profit at the expense of patients. That's an amazing consensus in American politics. 84% of Republicans and 84% of Democrats. More than that, Americans agreed on what kinds of rules ought to be applied to PBMs. Let me just tell you the top three policies that Americans agree upon by more than 80%. Number one, PBM shouldn't be able to make profits on the price of medicines. Think of it as the price of pills. PBM shouldn't be allowed to mark them up or manipulate prices to make profits from consumers. PBMs could make profits over services they provide, like processing drug claims or be paid fair market fees for negotiating with pharma manufacturers on behalf of patients. That's okay, but they shouldn't be able to manipulate drug prices, mark them up in order to make profits. Overwhelmingly, Americans agree with that proposition. Secondly, PBMs should be required transparently to report the prices they pay from manufacturers to drugs. They should report profits that they make and the sources of those profits. And the third finding is that PBMs should have to pass down any discounts they negotiate with pharma manufacturers, pass them through to health plans and to patients. So we see a number of bills, four separate bills are expected in the U.S. Senate this session, addressing PBMs, because senators are getting it that Americans, their own voters, are understanding the PBM problem. A number of bills are moving to the House of Representatives similarly. Our polling shows what members of Congress now understand, that Americans are getting it, that PBMs are a major problem driving the rising cost of drugs, and they want something to be done about it. In fact, over 70% of Americans have said that this, whether their elected representatives do something about the PBM issue, will be a determinant of how they cast their votes in the next election cycle.
Okay, so how can we as consumers, the listeners, how can we make a difference in making sure that these things that everyone agrees on go through for no profit on price, reporting the prices they pay, and passing on the discounts? What can we do?
Call members of Congress, tell them you care about this issue and you expect them to do something strong and effective on this issue. The number of bills that are moving through Congress now reflect that legislators understand that Americans are understanding the role of these intermediaries, these middlemen in the drug market, these arbitrageurs that are playing arbitrage on the price of Americans' patients' drugs. They understand there's a problem. Call them, let them know that you expect them to do something effective. Look, right now, the battle is enjoined in Washington, D.C. at the federal level, as it has been in several states, like the state of Nevada already, where you've passed strong legislation on transparency. The battle is enjoined, but PBMs are the richest entities in American healthcare. They have very deep pockets. They will throw large amounts of money into the political process, and money matters in politics, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's going to be people versus money. So people need to speak out and let their legislators know they will vote on this issue. That's the only way to counteract the money of PBMs in politics.
Okay. And what's the PBM Accountability Project?
The PBM Accountability Project is a not-for-profit advocacy organization to do research and develop policies to make prescription drugs affordable. It focuses principally on the role PBMs play in the prescription drug marketplace. It's brought together labor unions, employer organizations, independent pharmacy organizations, and other entities that care about doing something about the rising costs of prescription drugs. The PBM Accountability Project has done now some of the most broad-reaching and current research on the PBM business model. It also has supported state activities, state actions to create what are called PBM reverse auctions. They're actually competitive marketplaces, which require, in many cases for the first time, that PBMs transparently compete with each other to sell prescription drug plans to state employee health plans and other state insurance programs. So the PBM Accountability Project is out there doing research and helping states pass effective legislation to bring down the cost of prescription drugs, focusing particularly on the perverse role of PBMs in driving up drug prices.
Okay, nice. So you said the solution was to call our members of Congress, our senators and representatives, and Senator Cortez Masto is already on board with this. But before making that call or before sending that email, how do people find out more about this issue or about America's Agenda or the PBM Accountability Project?
I think the best source of information on the internet today about PBMs, what their business models are, and what can be done to effectively regulate them is pbmaccountability.org. That's the PBM Accountability Project's website, but it brings together masses of research and materials, policy ideas, pbmaccountability.org. I'd invite your listeners to go there to look at the wealth of information on that site.
Okay, nice. So once again, pbmaccountability.org is the website to go to, pbmaccountability.org. That's where you can find out more information about the PBM Accountability Project and about PBMs and what they're doing. And again, that stands for Pharmacy Benefit Managers, PBMs. So pbmaccountability.org. And once you have some information, be sure to call your members of Congress, the senators, the representatives, or you can send an email as well. And if you want to find out more about America's Agenda, that's also at americasagenda.org. And right. Mark, I want to thank you so much for being here today and letting us know what's going on, why the prices of prescription drugs are so high, and what we can actually do about it. So I really appreciate your expertise and your time. Thank you.
Pleasure to be with you.
Charlie did not die from an overdose. Charlie was poisoned.
No other family should go through this. It's just horrific.
Go to safe.pharmacy. Use the free tool. Learn if the online pharmacy you're using is safe.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me is Aaron Wesolowski, Vice President for Policy Research and Analytics at the American Hospital Association, or AHA. A new report from the AHA finds that more than half of all hospitals operated at a financial loss at the end of 2022, and that instability has continued into 2023. Aaron, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar, what exactly is the American Hospital Association?
So the American Hospital Association represents all types of hospitals across the United States and all states. So we represent urban and rural hospitals, small hospitals, large teaching hospitals, the whole gamut of hospitals. And what we do is sort of represent their interests when it comes to federal U.S. policy.
Okay. Now, what are some of your most important findings from your recent report?
Sure. Thanks. So the report found that after caring for more than 6 million patients hospitalized with COVID-19 and continuing to provide care for all patients during the pandemic, hospitals are now facing new challenges in the form of rapidly rising costs as a result of workforce shortages and record inflation. We've seen double-digit increases in things like drugs and supplies needed to care for patients. And the result has been that more than half of hospitals ended 2022 with operating losses.
Okay, now I understand the inflation part since that's across the board in all verticals, but what has caused the workforce reduction in hospitals specifically?
So we've had workforce challenges in the healthcare industry and with hospitals specifically for a number of years, even predating the pandemic. But what happened during the pandemic was that those workforce shortages were really exacerbated. So we had, you know, a high level of need in the form of COVID-19 patients who were very intense patients, required a lot of care. And obviously, burnout and other issues have caused people to leave the workforce in the last few years. So what that's done is created this new challenge of even worse workforce shortages post-pandemic.
Okay, so the combination of rising costs and reduced workforce kind of creates a perfect storm for the hospitals to be less successful. How does all this trickle down to the consumer or the potential patient?
You know, our primary concern is that down the line, it can affect access. It can make it harder for hospitals to continue providing all the services that they provide and ultimately, you know, to keep their doors open. So we've seen a number of hospital closures in recent years. Just in 2023 alone, since the start of this year, we've seen 8 rural hospitals close. So these pressures have an immediate impact on hospitals and the communities they serve.
Okay, so obviously we don't want to see hospitals closing. We don't want to see hospitals going out of business. And we definitely don't want to see a reduction in access to vital services that the hospitals supply. So we know the problem. Now, what's the solution to this issue?
So there isn't one solution. What the AHA is advocating for is a number of different approaches. We want to see policies out of Congress that bolster hospitals and health systems' efforts to support and strengthen the workforce and to ensure a future pipeline of professionals so that we can get ahead of this problem into the future. We want to very much want to reject any future additional cuts to the Medicare and Medicaid programs. Those programs already significantly underpay for the cost of providing care. So hospitals take a loss on most Medicare and Medicaid patients. And you know, we need to avoid additional cuts to those programs. But then for specific types of hospitals, we want to see some additional support. So we'd like to see a statutory designation to provide additional support for what we call metropolitan anchor hospitals that serve historically marginalized communities. And those are hospitals like University Medical Center in Las Vegas.
Okay. So what can listeners do if they want to help make a difference and make sure that the situation doesn't get worse?
I mean, I think, you know, as always, the best thing to do is reach out to their members of Congress to let them know that these hospitals are critical to their communities and that they want to see them protected.
Okay. Where can listeners go if they want to find out more information about the AHA or maybe find out more about some of the report findings?
They can go to our website at www.aha.org, and the report is on our website.
Okay, awesome. So aha.org is the website to go to, stands for the American Hospital Association, aha.org. You can find out more about the report findings there. And if you want to help out this situation, also reach out to your members of Congress, the senators, the representatives of the House, and let them know that this issue is important to you. And again, you can find out more information at aha.org. And Aaron, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know about this situation, what's happening, and what we can do about it. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
I taught for 20 years until I started forgetting my lectures.
Eventually, he had to quit. Getting his early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard, but it gave us time to take control of the situation together.
I can't imagine going through this without him.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Andrea Warwick, a nationally recognized money-saving expert who's been helping families find simple ways to save more and spend less without sacrificing their lifestyles for nearly a decade. She's been featured on countless top TV shows and major print publications, and now our 6 Odyssey radio stations in Las Vegas. 66% of Americans are actively looking for ways to trim expenses from their monthly budget, and Andrea has the tips to make that possible. Andrea, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, how do you suggest people start cutting costs and saving more?
Well, the first step is really to assess your monthly spending. A lot of people overlook opportunities to save, and they don't realize that they could be wasting money on services or fees that they don't need or that they didn't even know they were paying for. So the process is as simple as going through your credit card and bank statements over the last few months. List out each recurring fixed expense. Take an average spend for those fluctuating costs, like for food or gas and entertainment. And then don't overlook the expenses that are charged maybe on a quarterly or annual basis. And once you have it all listed out on paper or an Excel chart or however you want to do it, you can then create an action plan. Identify where you need to cut back and take the steps to start doing it.
Okay. Now, I did mention in the intro that you teach people how to do this without sacrificing their lifestyles. And I think a lot of people would think, well, I mean, automatically, as soon as I start cutting expenses, I'm sacrificing my lifestyle. So what's the key to not feeling any pain when we do this?
I think it really begins with assessing what makes you happy. What do you need for your lifestyle to bring you the most joy? Spend money on that, but then cut out the wasteful things that you really don't need. And I could just give you an example. For us, we don't feel that cable was bringing anything to the table. And so we were able to get rid of that bill. And we spend money maybe to go out to eat. That makes us happy. But then we save on other expenses. And so you really need to just figure out what is essential to your lifestyle and where you can cut back. And, you know, looking in your monthly bills, looking for potential savings and cutting out wasteful spending is really going to help you save money without sacrificing. And this could be paying for extra channels in your cable plan. Like I mentioned, are you paying for premium movie channels? You probably don't need them, especially if you have a video streaming subscription. If you've been auto-enrolled in a subscription service, maybe after a free trial that you didn't even know you were paying for, cutting that would help you save without sacrificing. And then look at your mobile data plan. Are you paying for unlimited data? Maybe you don't need it. Look at your actual usage. You might be able to switch to a lower tiered plan to help you save, or switch providers altogether. That could be a cheaper option, maybe with one of these newer online only wireless carriers that offer a lot lower cost plans. And then for your energy bill, simple things like unplugging unused gadgets could cut your spend by 10%. So like I'm saying, there are so many little simple things you could do to help you save without impacting your day-to-day life.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the utility bills. You mentioned not wasting energy, not wasting electricity, but utility bills in and of themselves aren't normally things we can just cut. So what tips do you have for cutting costs on the household bills, especially when utility prices keep rising?
Right. Well, I mentioned unplugging unused gadgets. So for maybe those hard to reach places like behind your entertainment system, you can use a power strip. They even make power strips that come with remote controls. So that could be really helpful. Definitely doing that can help you save. Running big home appliances like doing your laundry, your dishwasher, trying to do those outside of those peak energy hours, which are typically after work from 5 to 8 p.m., that would also help you save as well. And then for water, washing your clothes in cold water, hang drying your clothing, those types of things could also help you save. Lowering the water heater also is another way to help you save on your energy costs as well. So there are some simple things you can do. And even swapping out your incandescent light bulbs for those energy efficient ones will also impact your utility bills.
Okay, cool. Now, what tools are available to help consumers get their car insurance costs down?
This is another big one. So when you first purchased your car, you probably shopped around for the best price policy, but most people don't continue looking at their policy and they may overlook that the rates have gone up or miss opportunities at a competitor provider. And so you definitely want to shop around for your auto insurance. And there are tools that help you do that. In fact, Experian is more than just a credit bureau. They offer a variety of resources to help consumers save more money now through their CreditWorks program. And they give you access to a free auto insurance shopping service. And this is so great because it delivers tailored rates based on your current policy. So you don't have to, you know, change your policy. And their savings offer up to $900 or sometimes more than $900 per year. So you definitely want to take advantage of that. And then beyond just the auto insurance comparison, if you have a paid Experian membership, they give you access to a bill negotiation feature. And I love this because it does all the work of negotiating fees on your recurring bills with an average savings of $263. So you definitely want to check that out if you haven't been shopping around for your various bills and you want help doing that.
Nice. Okay. So grocery shopping is one of the other areas that consumers often say, well, the prices are rising astronomically for my weekly grocery run. What kind of tips do you have to save money at the grocery store?
Yeah, so the grocery prices are something that none of us can avoid, but the way you shop for groceries is going to be the best way to save. First, it all begins with a meal plan. Look at your week. What nights and days do you need to make your own meals? When are you going to be out, maybe at a meeting or dinner or lunch with friends? And then look for recipes that use the same ingredients. This is really going to ensure that you use everything in its entirety and nothing goes to waste. If you're constantly throwing food away because it's spoiled, gone bad, or leftovers you just didn't eat, then you're overbuying. Now that you know what meals you're making for the week, you can make a really detailed shopping list. check your pantry, your fridge and freezer to make sure you're not doubling up. And then look at store circulars online to see which local grocery stores have the best deals for the items on your list. And then you can, you know, create your shopping route based on that. And then, of course, when you go to the store, make sure you're looking at the store brand options, comparing prices and sales, looking for coupons through the grocery apps. All of these steps are really going to help you save big on those groceries. And it doesn't take a lot of work either.
Okay. You've shared a lot of tips here, but what are some of the other top tips for keeping money in our wallets that I might not have asked you about yet?
Yeah. So, you know, as much as I recommend that you really cut back on those discretionary purchases and limit those impulse purchases, I know there are things you need to buy no matter what. And so it's really important to get savvy with the way you shop. First of all, think beyond regular retail prices. Always look at used options before buying brand new. When it comes to electronics and home appliances, you can even save by looking at those certified refurbished options. That'll deliver savings from about 30 to 60%. Just make sure you're shopping with a reputable brand or retailer there. And then also look for coupons, always compare prices before you buy anything, and then even track sales. There are a lot of tools, whether you add it to your browser or your phone, that will alert you when something that you need to buy goes on sale, so you always get it at the best price.
Perfect. Okay. So where can listeners go to learn more about saving money?
Yes. Well, you can learn about all those money saving resources I mentioned at Experian.com/savings. And then you can check out my website, AndreaWarrock.com, or follow me on Instagram at AndreaWarrock for daily savings tips.
Awesome. Okay. So once again, Experian.com/savings is the website to go to for some tips, Experian.com/savings. And if you want to follow Andrea or you want to go to her website and look at all the wealth of information she has there, it's AndreaWarrock.com. That's spelled AndreaWarrock. AndreaWarrock.com, and also on social media at Andrea Warrock. Andrea, I want to thank you so much for being here. You've obviously got a wealth of expertise in this area, and you shared some fantastic tips. I hope people were recording this and they can go back. But otherwise, they've got your website, AndreaWarrock.com. Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Many business owners, entrepreneurs, and independent contractors can't stop themselves from spending all the money as it comes in, then incurring debt to pay taxes and other obligations. Help is available now. Debtors Anonymous is a 12-step recovery program to help people and businesses stop incurring new unsecured debt. Request free program literature at helpfordebtors.org. That's helpfordebtors.org.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is encouraging veterans to take care of their mental health through the Today I Am campaign. Find out more or access resources and support at maketheconnection.net. That's maketheconnection.net. And veterans in crisis should call 988 and press 1 for the Vet Crisis Line or send a text to 838-255. That's 988 and press 1 or send a text to 838-255. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, May 8th at 8 p.m. benefiting NLS, Nevada Legal Services, and Monday, May 22nd at 8 p.m. benefiting the Foundation for Recovery. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Foundation and the Gratitude Project are hosting the 6th annual Hidden Heroes Gala to celebrate the heroes behind the badge next Friday, May 12th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at the Cosmopolitan Las Vegas. Get your tickets or find out more at lvmpdfoundation.org. That's lvmpdfoundation.org. The Just One Project's third annual premier on cloud wine fundraising event takes place on Saturday, May 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at a private residence with valet parking available to guests. The Just One Project is Southern Nevada's largest mobile food pantry and distributes groceries to more than 20,000 food insecure residents every month. This year's event honors supporter Jerry Stanley, president and founder of SoilTech. Get your tickets at thejustoneproject.org/oncloudwine. That's thejustoneproject.org/oncloudwine. AARP is holding its first Benefits Badass contest. You could win $50,000 for submitting a 2-minute video telling how you make use of your AARP benefits. Upload your video by May 29th at aarpbenefitsbadass.org. That's aarpbenefitsbadass.org. Three Square's Bag Childhood Hunger campaign is doubling its impact thanks to matching sponsors through May 31st. For every dollar donated, Three Square can now provide up to 6 wholesome, nutritious meals to Southern Nevada children and families in need. Find out more or make a donation at threesquare.org. That's threesquare.org. Communities in Schools of Nevada is holding its annual graduation campaign through mid-June to support graduating high school seniors. Donations of any amount will help ensure Nevada students have the resources they need to graduate successfully. You can donate or find out more at cisnevada.org/graduate. That's cisnevada.org/graduate. And Chef Pete Gioni's running a 10-week Cooking for a Cure fundraising campaign with a goal of raising $100,000 over those 10 weeks to support the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. You can donate at the various partner restaurants or directly through his website through June 10th. Find out more, learn about healthy eating for cancer patients, see the list of participating restaurants, or make a donation at cookingforacure.com. That's cookingforacure.com.